Good morning, this is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose, and again I want to talk a little bit about roses, and I thought I would read from Diane Ackerman's book, The Natural History of the Senses, her chapter on roses. I'm holding a lavender rose called Angel Face, one of the 25 rose bushes planted around my house. For the first few years, deer that frequent my yard would steal in at dawn and eat the buds and succulent new growth. Once they ate the bushes right down to the dirt, leaving only small knobs that looked like the velvet of incipient antlers. I am used to embezzlers in the garden. The first summer of the grape arbor, I watched two vines evolve from flowers to succulent purple fruits, scents luscious and nearly bursting with fragrance. Each day I watched them waiting until the perfect moment of ripeness, imagining how it would be to roll the grapes around on my tongue, fresh, sweet, and quenching. One day, the grape's purple sheen changed to a taut, robust iridescence, and I knew the next morning would be the earliest day to pick. Such knowledge was not reserved for me alone. When I awoke, I found every single grape sucked dry, the skins littering the ground like tiny purple prepuces. This scene, left by raccoons, has repeated every autumn since, despite cages, cowbells, barbed wire, and other, quote, deterrents. And frankly, I've given up on grapes and raccoons. The roses pose a trickier problem. I love the deer as well as the roses, so I decided to use smell as a weapon. After all, plants do it. And I sprinkled a mixture of tobacco and naphtha around the rose bushes. It worked, but made the air raunchy and caustic. Unless you crave the smell of baseball players at winter camp, their mouths full of chewing mess, their pockets full of mothballs. This year I have another plan, lavender. Deer hate strong nose-scrubbing smell. I've ordered a dozen bushes to plant around the roses and daylilies, hoping they'll make an olfactory fence when the deer come calling. Still, we'll divide the spoils. I have left them the luxuriant raspberry bushes, which I no longer try to harvest, and the twin apple trees. The raccoons get the grape arbor because they so drench my senses, and the rabbits get wild strawberries, but the roses are sacrosanct because they so drench my senses with exquisite smells. The most expensive perfume in the world and one of the enduring classics, Joy, is a blend of two floral notes, jasmine and lots of rose. Roses have tantalized, seduced, and intoxicated people more than any other flower. They've captivated homeowners, swains, flower addicts, sensualists since the ancients. In Damascus and Persia, people used to buy berry jars of unopened rosebuds in the garden and dig them up on special occasions to use in cooking. The flowers would open dramatically on the plates. Jean Cocteau's film version of the fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, all the mischief and magic begins when a man picks a rose for his daughter, her sole desire among a sea chest of riches. Long ago, Europeans raised a tough mongrel rose that was loud, obvious, and very hardy, and whose fragrance could embalm a statue. But in the 1800s, they began importing Chinese tea roses, which smelled like fresh tea leaves when crushed, and also frost-delicate, ever-blooming Chinese hybrids with bright yellow to red flowers. Breeding the hybrid Chinas with European roses as carefully as racehorses, they produced subtle and sophisticated offspring roses, charmed to a seemingly endless array of colors, shapes, and scents. They called them hybrid tea roses. Since then, over 20,000 varieties have been bred, and at one time, the rose's fragrance was nearly lost through overbreeding. Fragrance seems to be a recessive trait in roses, and two deeply fragrant parents may produce a petal-perfect but smell-less offspring. Now the trend is toward perfumed roses, thank heavens. The most popular hybrid tea rose is Peace, a stunning multicolored pastel with sunset hues that shriek at noon during the day and grow muted at sunset and record all the other phantoms of light during the day. Its egg-shaped buds open into large pale yellow ruffles with translucent tips that are often flushed with pink, and it smells like the sugared leather dipped in honey. Of all my roses, peace seems to have an almost human complexion and human moods, depending on the moisture and light of each day. The peace rose I talked about last time, its history. Many presidents have had roses named after them. Lincoln's is blood red. John Kennedy's is pure white. And there are wittily named roses to honor movie stars or celebrities. Dolly Parton's is flamboyantly pungent with knockout-sized blossoms. Though roses symbolize beauty and love, their colors, textures, shapes, and smells are difficult to describe. Sutter's Gold, one of my favorite hybrid tea roses, produces a flat, ruffled flower of yellow petals tinged in apricot, fuchsia, and pink, with fragrance like sweet, wet feathers. The Floribundas, thoroughly modern roses, cascade with flowers all summer long. The Fairy has hardly any scent, but is a constant explosion of dainty pink flowers from spring to winter, despite light snowfalls. Roses were considered ancient when the Greek botanist Theophrastus wrote about the 100-petaled rose in 270 BC. Fossilized roses have been dated back as 40 million years ago. The Egyptian rose is what we now call the cabbage rose. Cleopatra knew her guest. Few people have been obsessed with roses as the ancient Romans. Roses were strewn at public ceremonies and banquets. Rose water was bubbled through the emperor's fountains, and public baths surged with it. In the public amphitheaters, crowds sat under sun awnings steeped in rose perfume. Rose petals were used as pillow stuffings. People wore garlands of roses in their hair. They ate rose pudding. Their medicines, love potions, and aphrodisiacs all contained roses. And I have a rose recipe that I would like to give you of my own. This is a hand lotion from my great-grandmother, and it consists of equal parts of rose water, glycerin, and bay rum. Now, the glycerin you probably will need to order from a pharmacist. The rose water you can find in herb shops, and bay rum is a man's cologne. It makes a wonderfully healing hand lotion when nothing else works for me. But I have to say that once I gave it to a friend, and her husband said it looked like a urine sample. So you need to identify it as lotion. This is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose.